Now, tomorrow night, with it being Halloween and all, and anyways, many of us will probably pop a classic scary movie into the DVD player, as Lottie was saying earlier. That's her plan after answering the door. Or maybe find one on Netflix and enjoy being scared by such characters as Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street, Jason in Friday the 13th, or Jack in The Shining, particular favourite. But frequently in horror movies, particularly the more violent and really bloody ones, mental illness is used as a handy, convenient explanation for the villain's maniacal behaviour. Now, a lot of classic horrors, or this was the really from the 70s and 80s. So how does Hollywood measure up now when it comes to portraying mental illness on the big screen nowadays? Has it improved? What impact even does Hollywood have on our perceptions of mental illness? Well, here to tell us all and fill in all those blanks is Amanda Fenley. Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, first of all, is it true that it basically, you know, is it a lot of it that classic horrors or slasher movies use mental illness as a kind of an easy way to explain a character's behaviour without digging a little bit deeper or giving us a full 3D image of what they're like, of what their personality is like?
Oh yes, completely. And the reason for that, it's one of the most common held myths with regard to mental illness that people have, is that people who are mentally ill are dangerous and violent. When in fact, it's more likely, it's been proven in studies on everything, that people with mental illness are more likely to be the victims of violence rather than the perpetrators. And indeed, if there is a case where they are violent, it's usually in a home situation, maybe where they're being looked after by family, and they're also maybe abusing alcohol and drugs as well as having their mental struggles. So this whole idea of horror movies that are using this as a quick excuse to say, oh, this, you know, slasher's gone on the absolute rampage, killing all and sundry, it's because of mental illness, it's kind of irresponsible and a bit dangerous to be doing. There's a lot of myths out there with regard to mental illness that horror movies and thrillers and things like that do use irresponsibly. Another one is that mental illness results or springs from a traumatic event, one single traumatic event, which is also usually unlikely. But it's a convenient tool. So a good example of that, do you remember Shutter Island, Martin
yes.
Scorsese's movie that was out a few years back? And Leonardo DiCaprio's yes. character had done something very bad, which resulted in everything that happened afterwards that we saw. Don't want to ruin it too much in case people haven't seen it. It's still a relatively new movie. But That is something that people think, and when in actual fact a traumatic event, usually if it results in mental illness, it's usually just post-traumatic stress disorder rather than necessarily becoming schizophrenic or manic or
I'm really glad you brought up that example of that film, because yeah. again, we won't give anything away, I really hate when that gets ruined, but it was one of those ones where you were like, what?
Yeah, and when you saw at the end how it all unfolded, it was all, I mean, obviously it was set in a mental asylum and everything else, but it had a lot to do with mental illness. But they did kind of use that one event, which was a very traumatic event that he went through, and to explain everything, which was probably the easy way out. And then speaking of mental asylums, and what we don't call them asylums here, but they do in America, that's another myth that people have about psychiatric treatment that comes from the movies. When you see how psychiatric treatment is done there, mental hospitals and asylums, you think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, one of the most classic movies yeah. of the 20th century. And a great movie in many ways when it comes to the acting and story writing and everything else, but when it comes to mental illness, or indeed the treatment specifically of mental illness, it probably does let people down a little bit. It's again, like horror movies, it's kind of a stereotype of this, the evil nurse and the evil place that the hospital is that's keeping Jack Nicholson's character here, that shouldn't be there, and all
and
that.
And the only therapy
things.
That works is electric shock therapy, which
exactly.
involves sponges, wetting
yeah.
and shaving hair.
Exactly, which is, I mean, it was of a different era, that movie, but at the same time, it was held up as this great movie, and you do have to look at and see, well, okay, yeah, it might be a great movie in one way, but how does it, you know, represent mental illness and treatment of mental illness, and maybe it does kind of let itself down a little bit.
But this
bit
is
there.
Brilliant, because you're talking about things there that we're now, we analyse loads of areas in movies, whether it's giving birth, all these non-realistic portrayals, we never really think of this.
Yeah, we see, it's important for me to point out here that we're not trying to trivialise mental illness by looking at it in the movies, because the thing is, mental illness it covers a whole host of mental health conditions, anxiety disorders, depression, schizophrenia, eating disorders, addiction behaviours like OCD, which is often a common one in the movies. But the thing about these conditions is a lot of people don't have first-hand experience of them. So therefore, they make up their minds of them, they make up their, they have assumptions and prejudices based on what they see and hear in the media, whether it's a movie, a TV series, a newspaper article, magazine article, whatever. So if you're going to explore mental illness in the movies, you do have to be conscious of that, yeah, that people are taking away from that their view of mental health and mental illness. And
you have a responsibility to get it right.
Absolutely. And the really interesting thing is, I mean, we've all heard, thankfully we're talking a lot more about this now in society. Unfortunately, many of the reasons why we are is because it is so predominant and people are taking their own lives sometimes as a result of it. And that's why we need to talk about it more. But 1 in 4 people will encounter mental illness in their lives. And when you consider that 1 in 4 people encounter it, you would imagine that when you see characters on screen, like think of all the movies that come out every year, think of all the characters that we see when we go to the cinema or turn on our TV screens even, many more of them should be seen struggling with mental illness, and they aren't. Yeah. If it's representative of real life, 1 in 4. So that's something that also needs to be considered.
Yeah,
as well.
And without getting too heavy on it, that is the job of art, isn't it? To mirror life. So
yeah, absolutely.
And looking at the much less than should be the case instances where they have done that. So as you mentioned there, Shutter Island, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Mm-hmm. What about, you know, do you think it's important that they really explore the subject in some of the other areas, like in film, such as Good as It Gets?
Yeah, I think I myself think it's better to explore, not necessarily directly in that the whole movie needs to be better. Now, that does work sometimes. As Good as It Gets is a great example, because not only is it entertaining and funny, but it does really, really well explore the whole area of OCD. Jack Nicholson's character, he pops up quite a lot in these things, doesn't he?
Hang on
he
a
has
minute.
That look about him, I suppose. He has OCD in the movie, but it's about the love story with the character of Helen Hunt plays as well, and how he overcomes his issues with OCD to get out more and engage more with people.
Such a great
but I've read a lot of people who either had OCD or deal with the mental illness say that his portrayal was great, and they really, it was a favourable one, definitely. And another one that looks kind of where the mental illness really is centre to the plot is The Beaver. I don't know if you saw that with Mel Gibson a couple years ago.
Yes, it is.
To some people, probably an odd movie, but I thought an excellent movie that really explored depression really well, because oftentimes when someone is depressed on screen, it's not really as deep as it can go. It's not really as dark as it can go, but in The Beaver, it certainly was. But I think overall what we should be looking towards, or what Hollywood needs to be looking towards, is exploring mental illness in movies about something else. In a sense that when you think back, homosexuality back in the day, you know, wasn't explored properly in screen. You didn't see homosexual characters, or if you did, they were stereotypes or whatever. Nowadays, thankfully...
Or it was all in a glance and then cut to
exactly,
black.
Exactly, and ignored or hidden or whatever. And nowadays it's gotten so much better. When you have something that people hold prejudice towards, I think it really helps if a character can be seen as not being defined by what's going on. So therefore, these days we have movies where a character can be gay, but it's not necessarily central to the story, or it might only be a part of it, obviously, you know, if they're in a relationship or whatever. Yeah. It's reflected in real life. Yeah. They could be a gay character going through something else entirely, just so happens that they're gay. Same way then, you can have a movie where someone is going through something else entirely. Entirely, just so happens that they also have an anxiety disorder, or they suffer a bit from depression, or someone connected to them does, and you can explore the mental illness that way, which is far more realistic than necessarily just doing a whole big movie about mental illness or mental health, as sometimes can work, as we said, with The Beaver and As Good as It Gets. But I think it works a lot more if it's explored as it would be in real life, because real life still goes on around you when you're struggling with your mental health. So that's something that you know, I think we've come a long way when it comes to homosexuality, and I think we can do the same with mental illness. There's no reason why we can't.
No, there isn't. And when you look back, even going back to something Psycho, because Psycho is on at the moment tonight and tomorrow night, I think it is, in the Helix with the live screening with the National, the RT Concert Orchestra are going to be accompanying. So really, I mean, the music in that is amazing. But that one was the sole focus really of that film, and once you knew and what was happening, so that wouldn't be done that way these days.
Well, it could be done in a more realistic sense, that he's not necessarily going to end up, you know, murdering guests in the shower. But I mean, multiple personality disorder is something that you could actually get a great movie out of if explored properly. And there is, I mean, another one that you think of in a similar way to Psycho is Fight Club, and in that sense as well, the character is going through multiple personality disorder, and it's an area that's probably is a bit more extreme. I mean, if you look at mental illness, there's a very extreme and different types of mental illness, and I suppose stuff like multiple personality disorder is ideal to be used in a psycho sense, in like what we just talked about in horror movies, as a handy way to say this is why this person doesn't know that they're going around killing people or whatever, and it can be used irresponsibly that way too. But it does bring up that whole issue, like in Fight Club, of someone who really believes that they're talking to this other person or whatever, and you can explore that once it's done in a responsible way.
It's really that's a really good example. We were talking about that earlier, because you're so busy sometimes when Fight Club pops into your head. I don't know about you, but the first thing I think of is Brad Pitt, funnily enough, and then I go, why is that spooky movie? And then Grace just goes, it's something to do. I think it's quite psychotic, wouldn't it be? And then Kate's like, yes, Edward Norton is imagined, his whole character. Aha, that's what it is. We have a text in. A Clockwork Orange dealt with society's perceived mental illness of teenagers, treating them with shock treatment and a version of normal by society.
Again, yeah, another movie from that era, 70s, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, around that time, all those kind of movies. And I think we've come on from then, where we can explore mental illness and the treatment of mental illness in a more sophisticated way, or in a more subtle way as well.
Well, I mean, people are probably screaming at the radios now, the Silver Linings Playbook. I mean, Amanda, seeing that, it was just a really beautiful one where it's just a very special relationship between two people who happen to have mental illness. So I think we have a little clip of that. Will we have a little listen?
So how's your thing going? Dancing thing.
That's good. How's your restraining order?
I wouldn't actually call the restraining order my thing, but getting back with Nikki is, and I think I'm doing pretty well. Except for a minor incident at the doctor's office.
And the so-called incident with the weights.
Yeah, that was the thing with my parents. How'd you lose your job?
Having sex with everybody in the office.
Everybody?
I was very depressed after Tommy died. It was a lot of people.
We don't have to talk about it.
Thanks.
Yeah, I look, that's not a funny scene. It's just the way he goes, everybody.
Well, I mean, the Silver Linings Playbook, the really interesting thing about this movie for me is that it was made by David O. Russell for one reason particularly, and this is a reason how, or a way I think that we should be exploring mental health and mental illness in the movies. David O. Russell's son suffers from bipolar disorder and OCD, and he was very passionate about making this film based on a novel. So he didn't actually come up with the idea, but when he read the novel, he was like, I want to make this movie. And I think that's how we could really do it properly. I think if more writers, directors, actors who have encountered mental illness, whether it is them themselves or maybe a family member like David O. Russell, if they're the ones who are writing and directing and portraying these stories, then we're going to get somewhere with this, as Silver Linings Playbook did. Now, it came in for some criticism. There was people who pointed out that Bradley Cooper's character, Pat, who is bipolar, we never really see him in the movie suffering from a depressive phase. He's constantly hyper, kind of high or hyper, or when he's in between, he's not particularly low, which isn't quite representative of the condition. But obviously, there's certain poetic license that's going to be taking for a story and for a drama, unfortunately, and sometimes little details like that can go awry.
I think they indicate in his life as well that those times have happened. The fact that he's living back at home, and then we should see him medicated, so we'd see the media, the past is indicated, the media level where he's medicated is shown, and then we see the hyper stages. So
yeah, and I mean, it is explored in it as well that he had attacked his ex-wife was having an affair, and he, you know, attacked, it was a teacher from the school that he worked in. And in fairness, you don't have to be suffering from mental illness if you saw your partner, you know, having an affair with someone that you might tear after them.
Fair
you know?
Point.
But the point is how he reacted afterwards. Yeah. He didn't see it as being wrong, and it was kind of suggested that it was very much a good reason why he was in the psychiatric hospital at the start of the movie and he was coming out of it. And the whole area of medication was really interesting too. I read an article actually from a psychiatrist who thought it was really interesting. There's a great conversation when they meet first, Jennifer Lawrence's character and Bradley Cooper's, and they talk about their medication. Well, I'm on this and the side effects of this. It's quite a funny conversation.
And you imagine that happens.
Yeah, and he said, the psychiatrist said, he felt, you know, he was asked, was this irresponsible? He said, no, not at all. Even though you at times see Bradley Cooper in the movie not wanting to take his medication. He said, this is something we encounter in treating people. If medication, which isn't always necessarily the option for treating a mental illness, but in the case of it seen as the right way to go, sometimes the patient doesn't always want to take it, or they have these discussions with each other about what are you on, this is what I'm on, and these are the side effects and blah blah blah. And he said he felt that conversation was actually responsible rather than irresponsible in the movie, and it was a good thing to happen. I think overall Silver Linings Playbook is probably one of the most fair and decent ways of representing mental illness on the big screen. And in fact, there's these awards in Hollywood that not many people know about, unfortunately, called the PRISM Awards, and they've been given out for the last 19 years, and they recognise the good treatment of mental health and addiction in entertainment, be it in television, in cinema, and in print as well.
This is brilliant. They're really ahead of their time, aren't they?
Yeah, and the PRISM Awards that year awarded Silver Linings Playbook the best movie for representing mental health. So clearly they thought it did a good job.
I mean, and it did well, obviously, at the Oscars, but it also looked like everybody on screen upped their game. There was no chance in this film of Robert De Niro phoning it in. He gave a great. He tipped his hat to say, "This is what I can do when I'm focused."
He was going through his mental struggles too, and he's gambling addiction and his OCD, and it's actually sometimes quite subtle throughout. I mean, it seems obvious that it's a love story, and there is another kind of common myth in Hollywood when it comes to the treatment of mental illness, that the love of a good man or a woman is all you need to suddenly be 100% better, and obviously that's not the case. But studies have shown that those who are struggling with mental illness, be it depression, anxiety, or even schizophrenia or whatever, all do better if they are in a relationship where they're in love with someone.
Sure.
It's not going to cure you or be the answer to your issues, but it really helps someone. And I think that was shown in Silver Linings Playbook as well. We kind of know afterwards, I'm sure, Pat and Tiffany probably had their issues still to sort out, but they had each other as well and they were going to get through it.
And it also could be platonic love. I saw again recently, I don't know if you saw it was on TV again, Rain Man. I mean, that was 1987, was it? 1988 movie. And there we have Dustin, Oscar-winning Hoffman, giving the performance of his career as an autistic man who, again, got a huge amount of positive support for that role because it was very well, it looked and seemed very well researched, very well portrayed.
It was, Rain Man's one of my favourite movies, and I absolutely adore Dustin Hoffman, particularly in that role. There has been some criticism, not of his portrayal or anything like that, but that's always Hollywood usually represents autism as being a savant, as being this genius, whether it's maths
and
or something else.
That's not realistic.
And that is not actually the case. More often than not, if someone is autistic, they don't necessarily have any amazing skills or certainly genius level skills. So it's probably wrong to always suggest that on television and the movies, because if someone is diagnosed as autistic, especially if they're not severe, that they kind of understand what's going on, that they're going, well, why aren't I a genius if I'm an autistic person or whatever?
Because they say it can be mostly people with autism, it can be slightly above average intelligence, but mostly it's certain hobbies or focused areas of interest and subjects of interest.
Yeah, that they would have, it's like a mastermind, your special subject they could be great at, but they won't necessarily be an absolute genius like it's sometimes suggested. Another one where someone is a genius, A Beautiful Mind, which also got lots of Oscar glory, like Silver Linings Playbook, and did as well come in for a little bit of criticism too with regard to how it represented mental health. I think we have a clip.
Yes.
Let's have a listen.
Why did you stop your meds?
Because I couldn't do my work. I couldn't help with the baby. I couldn't respond to my wife. I think that's better than being crazy.
We'll need to start you on a higher run of insulin shocks and a new medication.
No. There has to be another way.
Schizophrenia is degenerative. Some days may be symptom-free, but over time, you're getting worse.
It's a problem. It's a problem with no solution. And that's what I do. I solve problems. That's what I do
best.
This
isn't math. You can't come up with a formula to change the way you experience the world.
All I have to do is apply my mind.
Indeed. Amanda, what did you think of that?
Well, I really enjoyed it as a movie. Now, when it comes to representing mental health, it's based on a real-life character, John Nash. And the main problem that some psychiatrists or whatever would have with A Beautiful Mind is that when it looks at schizophrenia, it represents the hallucinations as being visual. Throughout the movie. And in actual fact, schizophrenics usually have only auditory hallucinations. They hear voices, they hear people talking to them, or they hear messages in their head or outside, or they hear different things, and they don't actually see them. So that was a major criticism of the portrayal, but obviously it made for a better movie for it to be visual rather than auditory, right, in the nature of what the movie explored and this, how the storyline went. But in saying that, it humanized John Nash, it humanized the condition of schizophrenia at a time even when people still are see it as something more likely to to throw up in Psycho or
a horror movie of some kind.
And it was a lot more a humanized version of that. So I think overall it was decent enough to probably not quite in the same level as Silver Linings Playbook in the sense of how it explores mental illness, because I suppose we didn't really realise for a while exactly what was going on in A Beautiful Mind too.
And we've a couple of text things, I know, because before we have to go, but the garden stage with Zach Braff deals with his depression really well, mm-hmm, and Sling Blade and Garage dealt with mental illness beautifully.
Well, Garage was one I picked out. I just picked out a couple at the end just to say to you that I felt did a really good job of exploring mental illness. I think Garage for me is actually my favourite Irish movie ever made, personally.
Wow.
For me,
yeah, it's a brilliant film,
and nothing much happens in it, but it's exploration of a character, it's exploration of rural Ireland, it's exploration of loneliness, mental health, relationships, being male and alone in this country, which is something that we don't talk about enough. I think Garage does an amazing job. Pat Short surprises with his nuanced performance. It's one of my most favourite performances of an Irish male actor in a movie, and it's so tragic and sad, and it really upsets me every time I watch it, yet I can't help but watch it if I come across it on TV or whatever.
And everybody knows somebody who seems to be going through something similar.
Goes through something like that. It's happening way too much in this country. It's something we need to talk about. You know, I've been involved in the Cycle Against Suicide and the station and other programs and stuff, and just mental illness and depression, it's just we need to talk about it.
Yes.
More. We are talking about it more, but it's not moving as fast as it needs to. And sometimes movies like these allow us to talk about it in a safer way. We don't have to say I'm going through that, but we can say, did you see that movie?
Yes.
Garage, you know, Pat Short, did you see it? Yes. And we can talk about it that way, and that opens the doors, lifts the lid.
Exactly. Amanda, it's been so good talking to you. I could talk to you loads more, because there are loads more films
there.
There are so many.
Can I just say, actually, The Aviator is another great one for OCD. This true story of Howard Hughes.
Right.
Another Scorsese movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. The Soloist, which is a movie that didn't get much attention, with Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx. And Jamie Foxx plays a homeless musician who's suffering from schizophrenia. And he has the auditory hallucinations. And it's a wonderful exploration of that side of things. He does a great job as well. And The Hours is one with Nicole Kidman for depression, where she plays the author, Virginia
Meryl
Wolf.
Streep is in that, yeah.
And it's three different women in three different stages, and they're all somehow connected to the book, Mrs. Dalloway, and the whole area of mental health and depression. So they're ones that are worth checking out if you want to find out a bit more.
Well, Amanda, these movies open up the lid and the doors to mental illness, and you have turned the key. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. We'll be back after these.